23rd, 1972, in the office of President Emeritus Frederick L. Hubde, and R.B. Eccles, interviewer. This is for the Purdue University Archives. Well, President Hubde, let's start out with the story of the regional campuses.
Regional campus development under the aegis of the state universities in Indiana was an interesting developmental story. The state university, Indiana University, of course, had extension, had its so-called extension program, the largest element of which was located in Indianapolis. But it also developed in some 8 or 10 other cities in the state. Extension Educational Service, this type of Extension Educational Service in the urban setting, envisage is a necessary and a valuable educational service, and encompasses a wide variety of programs serving a wide variety of educational needs in the urban setting. Purdue's principal involvement in extension education, of course, had was that of the Cooperative Agricultural Extension Service, where the farmers and homemakers in the rural scene throughout the whole state were part of Purdue's operating campus. And Purdue's development in the Cooperative Agricultural Extension Service was carried out through the county agent system, which meant that the county agent was not only an administrator but also a teacher, a purveyor of scientific and other types of information to the user, the learner, in this case the farmer and his family. But Purdue University also had the responsibility for engineering in the state of Indiana, engineering education. And when I came to Purdue in 1946, I felt that Purdue should develop a regional campus system located in the industrial sections of our state, the urban industrial cities. This meant, of course, Indianapolis, the largest city. It meant Lake County, which was the largest industrial complex in the state of Indiana, and the Fort Wayne area. Purdue's start in off-campus extension service in science and engineering came with the development of the so-called ESMWT program during World War II. In this program, scientific and engineering and technical training courses were developed in the aid of the war production effort during World War II, and Dean Potter, Purdue's famous Dean of Engineering, was one of the chief administrators of this educational development in Indiana and for that matter, the nation. The extension educational services were not recognized by the state legislature in the form of appropriations for either capital or operating expenses. And hence the extension service program, extension services programs in the urban setting, developed by IU and then later by Purdue, were bootstrap operations. In our first major move was in Lake County, the largest industrial area of the state. with the help of one of the then trustees, Anderson, we surveyed some 18 different sites. We might find a location with Trustee Anderson's help. We raised some money and finally purchased a 40-acre site in the Woodmar district of Hammond, which was very centrally located to the entire area, Whiting, East Chicago, Hammond, and Gary. Using the Ross Aid Foundation of the university as the financial vehicle, administrative vehicle, we borrowed money and built the first unit of a planned campus at Calumet, called the Calumet Center in Hammond, in the Woodmar district. The university then leased the building, paid rent for it, and the rent was to amortize the cost of the academic building. And the charges made on students, charges to students were on a credit hour basis, and a certain amount of that charge per credit hour was reserved then to pay off the building. We purchased the original 40 acres at Calumet, and then knowing that over the long haul, as that whole area developed, Lake and Porter counties around the south end of Michigan, that we would need much more land than the original 40 acres. So again, using the foundations, Ross Aid Foundation, Purdue Research Foundation, we purchased another 160 or more acres contiguous to the original 40, and had a 200-acre campus in the heart of that region. And later, of course, the one of the super highways went through the south, touched on the south border of the campus, and of course on the east side of the campus was Indianapolis Avenue, a main north and south artery. In Indianapolis, we operated for some time in the old Marat building, which was originally built as a Indianapolis Athletic Club. It was on Meridian Street, about 12th or 13th, as I remember. This was a Purdue University Center in Indianapolis. With the help of Charles Lynn and William Hanley, who were then trustees, Mr. Stewart, R.B. Stewart, the vice president and treasurer of the university, and myself surveyed a great many sites in Indianapolis for the development of Purdue University Regional Campus in Indianapolis, and we finally chose the 38th Street site. We were able to purchase 17 or 18 acres there, across from the main entrance to the state fairgrounds. In my thinking at the time, one of the prime reasons for choosing this particular site was the fact that the fairground was there and offered a potential area for expansion in the long haul ahead. And there was space and parking and other buildings and so on in the state fairgrounds that were unused during the year, major portion of the year, and might be available. At any rate, the 38th Street campus then was developed. One of the interesting developments in the 38th Street campus was that when we built our first building, Cranard Building, we decided to go ahead and build a companion building which we would then lease to a company or building until we would need it in the future. So the companion building was built and leased to Standard Oil Company of Indiana. And just at the time that Standard Oil Company decided to leave that building, some 12 years later, I don't remember the exact amount of time, the development of our Indianapolis campus had reached a stage where we badly needed additional facilities. So Standard Oil moved out and we acquired a building which we had originally designed in the same basic modules, and was easily converted into an educational building, and it was almost completely paid for. So we got the building coming on stream at just the right time, and almost completely paid for by the Standard Oil Company, that leased it during its first years. It was a case of a planned bootstrap operation, which was very, very successful. In Fort Wayne, the Catholic Youth Organization had originally built a building in the center of Fort Wayne Business District. They had disposed of it. It was like a large athletic club building in the downtown area. It had swimming pool and gymnasiums and rooms and of all types and kinds. This became available and we purchased it and set up our Fort Wayne operations there, which were highly successful from the beginning. Our emphasis in the regional campus development was, of course, to provide the first 2 years of all Purdue's professional academic programs so that students who wanted to start engineering could start it at the Indianapolis, Fort Wayne, or Calumet, then come to the campus and finish their professional degrees in junior and senior years. It was to offer two-year technical and scientific programs, so-called technical institute programs, which were designed to train engineering aides and whose curricula had been developed nationally and were approved by the Engineers Council for Professional Development, accredited by the Engineers Council. And, of course, to offer adult education courses, whatever was needed to serve the interests of the adults in those areas. Then, of course, we developed extensive programs of service, direct service to industrial companies, the training program for industrial supervisors, foremen. It was a tremendous program in Calumet Center, primarily to serve the steel industries, and in particular, the principal collaborator was Inland Steel. These programs developed on the bootstrap principle until the what year was it? First year that the legislature recognized the regional campus programs of the two state universities. Began to give us appropriations for capital and for programs, operational programs. But as these extension regional campuses developed, we entered into several agreements with between State Purdue and Indiana, which were interesting. The first one, so-called guest host arrangement, I worked out with President Wells. This meant that where there was an educational need and an existing university regional campus or center operation, that host university regional campus would invite the guest campus to come in and give these courses. This was to provide the particular kind of academic offerings that Purdue had developed in other regional campuses, and likewise at the Purdue campuses to offer the specialties that IU taught. So the guest host arrangement was the first of the collaborative arrangements between the two state universities. Later, when we moved from downtown Fort Wayne to a new campus, the northeast edge of that city, we combined forces to provide a joint regional campus, the Indiana-Purdue campus in Fort Wayne. And this was a direct cooperative program. Likewise, later in Indianapolis, the two universities joined forces to put the entire administration of the regional campus under one head, namely Indiana, and it's now called Indiana-Purdue University in Indianapolis.
Will they ever change the name of the university to what Mr. Lugar wanted, namely University of Indianapolis?
Well, I can't answer that question. It resides in the future. And it doesn't make much difference what the name is, really, in the long run.
As long as they get the service.
The problem is it has the potential of developing into a 30,000-student university quarter center just to the west of the downtown area, bounded on three sides by the river, and containing a complex with medical school, and dental school, and nursing school, and law school, and all the academic specialties, including engineering, all the sciences, business, and a tremendous adult evening program, adult educational evening program. And that die is cast, and we'll move ahead regardless of the problem of naming.
Name is inconsequential.
Incidental. It's not inconsequential in the sense that what was developed there and so on was developed by Indiana University and Purdue University working together. And, the name now recognizes the joint nature of the two institutions. Pride and tradition come into it. The development of the regional campuses proceeded largely from programs which were primarily the first 2 years of college to a planned development of adding the junior year and the senior year, and they become bachelor degrees programs in many fields have been developed for the regional campus. And as they developed, they became more and more autonomous in every respect. Faculty autonomy, administrative autonomy, financial autonomy and management. And in essence, the Fort Wayne campus is a large campus of more than 4,000 students. Calumet campus at Purdue University is in the same range. They've become large operating institutions. They're residential institutions. None of them have built dormitory facilities. And as residential as urban, as institutions serving the urban educational needs, they probably will not have extensive dormitory developments. They will tend to serve the commuter student. lives at home. A fascinating development story, and the quality of the academic work, freshman sophomore coursework, as it originally developed, we developed the same quality and the same level, and the students who transferred, you wouldn't know where they had their freshman sophomore work compared to students who've taken it here on campus. Then, of course, concomitant developments and off-campus graduate work took place, particularly to provide master's programs for engineers who were working in industry and who wanted advanced studies. And I think today there must be somewhere between 800 and 1,000 such students in the system who are doing advanced work in engineering while they're working at the regional campus centers.
Didn't Chuck Beese and later Chuck Lausche work with you on the development of this?
Chuck Beese was dean of the Extension Services when I came to Purdue, and it had a part in the management of the extension program that existed and that was kept in being after the World War II ended and the ESMWT programs were closed out. The wartime programs were closed out. The real major push and development came when Dean Beese retired and Dr. Lausche took over as Vice President for Regional Campus Administration. But one could foresee the development of these institutions twenty-five years ago. The existence of Indiana University in Gary and Purdue University in Calumet and Hammond, Indiana University in South Bend, joint Purdue-Indiana University in Fort Wayne, a joint operation now in Indianapolis, and of course Ball State and Indiana State Universities in Muncie and Terre Haute. We have a four-institution combination in Richmond, working with Earlham. All four state universities are involved in the management of the Extension Educational Service in Richmond, Indiana. So the state is now well served. All the towns whose population is large enough to support a regional campus center are served. The town is too small. It becomes very, very costly to operate a community college, a junior college, or a university regional campus, because you don't have a large enough steady input of students to make the operation of the institution economically reasonable and viable. But there are private or state university campuses within 25 miles of 95% of Indiana's population. The private institutions plus the public give the state a very good coverage. The collaboration of the regional campus system with the main campus of Indiana and Purdue is, to me, a wise route to follow, because regional campuses, for instance, can't possibly plan to develop the library resources that exist, or the professional laboratory and scientific equipment that is in existence on the main campuses. The main campuses should be the academic center for the system, centers for the system, and should be the centers for professional, advanced professional, the graduate work that's fostered by the state system. And that's the way it's developing, and the way it should develop. The regional campus development of the past 25 years has been a very happy and interesting and exciting one. That's one of which I am quite proud and my part of it. And one in which we've had a remarkable record of educational cooperation with Indiana University.
This is the first time I've heard, in a sense, a discussion of the origin and development of the regional campuses. I think the next topic, or something that we have touched on in other topics, if we go on, and that was, we talked about regional campuses, and the next on our list was something to do with the students. Is there anything specially that we haven't touched on, because I know we've talked generally about it. Perhaps you'd like to talk about Don Mallett and some of the student services.
Well, the story of student services at Purdue is directly related to the type and nature of the institution. One, it is a large university located in a small city. It has an enormous residential system. The university developed an enormous dormitory system for both men and women. Through the years, the fraternity and sorority system flourished. And it was part and parcel of university policy throughout all these years to provide everything here in the nature of recreation, housing, extracurricular activities, intramural athletics, concerts, student activity programs, music, theater, opera, the whole gamut of activities and presentations and programs outside the classroom to provide a lively, interesting, stimulating living environment for 25,000 students spread through the spectrum of freshmen entering the university to graduate students who are in their 20s and 30s in terms of age group. Consequently, the management of student service enterprises, the dormitory and living conditions and so on, became a very, very important aspect of the university's administration. One of the first services, the Purdue Memorial Union, provided a home for on the campus for all the student activities. Student government, student newspaper, student clubs, student hobby clubs, billiards, bowling, ballrooms, all that sort of thing. The management of the Purdue Union from the very first, under Vice President Stewart and Lloyd Vallely, who was director of the Purdue Memorial Union, was a pioneering student service management set up that was one of the envies of the college world, as a matter of fact. And even today, the Purdue Memorial Union is a tremendously impressive operation. The dormitory system, the management of that system was vested in the vice president and treasurer of the university. And that meant that he not only had the responsibility for the economics of the dormitory system, but also for the life within the system and the counseling within the system. And you will find that the Purdue dormitory system is probably one of the best managed and most efficient, and certainly one of the, a system with the highest possible management standards and living standards that you'll find on a college campus anywhere. There's a degree of cleanliness and a degree of maintenance and pride that is outstanding in the dormitory system.
Now,
the union operation and the dormitory operation is under the vice president and treasurer. The problem of student organizations, their management and place in the campus life, the problems of student discipline, the problems of the management of university-sponsored student programs like the band and the glee club and the intramural sports program, so on, were vested in under the office of the vice president for student services, and under the vice president for student services, the office of the dean of men and dean of women. And dean of men and dean of women, while they have disciplinary responsibilities, had jurisdiction over student activities outside the dormitory system. They had no responsibility for within the dormitory system. The staff of the vice president and treasurer had the responsibility within the dormitory system and for the management of the Purdue Memorial Union. But all the rest of the student life program, well, I forgot the student health service, for instance, comes under the vice president for student services.
Now, that was not the way it was when you came in. Wasn't there one man, didn't George Davis have the student services per se?
Yes, he had an office of student affairs,
yes.
He was director of student affairs. I changed that back to dean of men, dean of women offices, and then later with the, you see, I had Frank Hockma as executive, as vice president as a co-vice president with the business vice president, R.B. Stewart, and Frank Hockma was executive dean in the early days and had supervision of those aspects of student services that were not involved under Vice President Stewart, the business office. Student government, student newspaper, and the two arms of the student government that in recent years have called for the greatest skill in handling. Almost every college campus had journalistic troubles with student journalism. And of course, student government, depending on the quality of your leadership, can be either good or bad. And of course, the powers that are given to student government are not very great in terms of management of the university. And there have been well-defined movements to obtain more power and so-called power in respect to the management of the university on the part of student governments. It requires a great deal of skill and leadership and so on to manage.
I always thought a very good move was that in 1954, when the students worked out their own constitution, or charter for the government.
Well, the organization and charter and the way the students set up their own government is essentially their own problem. The powers that are given to a student government are given to it by the trustees, and essentially those powers relate to having a say in student activities, but not academic say. And for instance, the sororities and fraternities have their Panhellenic Council and the Interfraternity Council, and those two councils, which are representative of units of the system, two systems, determine and make the rushing regulations. And then presumably they all are supposed to live by those regulations which they make. Management of the university from the president's office then finally evolved into the team concept that I thought worked so well the last 5 years of my administration. The president's office really consists of himself, his executive assistant, and the vice presidents, vice president and treasurer of the university, who's the chief business officer, the vice president for academic affairs, who acts for the president with respect to the academic program of the schools and departments of the university, the vice president for research and also dean of the graduate school, whose primary administrative interest and responsibility involves in the research program of the university, which is intimately linked to the graduate program, and the vice president for regional campus administration, the vice president for student services. Now this was 2, 6, 2, 7 men, 5 vice presidents and my executive assistant, Dr. Hicks, whose number one job, of course, was relations with the state legislature and relations with other institutions, both public and private. And each of these men complemented each other. The vice president for research and dean of the graduate school came out of the biological sciences area and agriculture. The first Vice President for Academic Affairs, Paul Cina, came out of engineering and science. Vice President Lausche's field was industrial psychology with particular interests in personnel management. He ran the regional campuses. Vice President Mallett's whole experience was in student counseling, student services, student discipline. And so this made a team of superior individuals whose academic experience in teaching and research and training made a team who complemented each other. We met every Monday noon for a couple of hours, and everybody, all the vice presidents, went through their current problem situations, difficulties, in the presence of all the other vice presidents, so that everyone knew
what was going on. Sir, we stop for a second and we turn over this tape. We'll go off the tape for a moment and resume on side B.